With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, we are Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here, our next guest. Wow, he's kind of known for, he was in A Beam of Light. I mean, you know, boom, I'm just throwing it out there. He's in Beam of Light. He's going to tell us all about it. And he had witnesses. That was the difference. It was the Berkshire incident. And you've heard this story along the way. And, you know, it's you may have seen it in a documentary or so. But, it, you know, these things still affect people way after it ever happens. And amazingly enough, more and more information comes out every year almost from when these types of things happen. People, you know, especially because of internet and radio and different things like that, you know, somebody far away or somebody at one point will listen and hear something, they'll just happen to catch it and go, oh my gosh, you know, wow, that happened when, what? It either relates with them or, you know, who knows, maybe they could have even had the same thing happen at the same time type of thing. And this is one of those incidences where a lot of people were involved and a lot of witnesses, but to be able to, you know, I've seen the beams of light. I can't believe it, you guys, because I was thinking I was going to see an orb. You know, I knew this is when all sorts of things were happening to me. At one point, what I was seeing, Elvis in the window, this huge head, Sasquatch or Dogman head in the window, and this whole big night of all sorts of things happening. And one of those things is when I was pulling myself up in kind of like a frozen state, knowing that there was going to be light that I was going to see. I was just thinking, oh, it's going to be this orb. This is my buddy Jason Frank that took me up to the Rockies to one of our creepy hotspots that I do. And I was thinking I was going to see this big orb he talked about, the size of a VW. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm finally going to see one of these orbs. You know, I want to see this stuff. I do this, you guys. It's unreal. And so as I'm looking and going, I'm going to see an orb. It was a beam of light, something I never, ever, ever thought I would get. I remember seeing one video along the way that looked like what I would have thought a beam of light was. And it was down with the, what was it? The Stevensville, right? Was it Stevensville, Texas? Is that Stevensville? And there was somebody that had video of a beam of light, and they had spoken about it, like, take a look at it. It doesn't actually hit the ground. It goes here or there. You know, it was describing it differently than what we would know a beam of light to do if it was a helicopter going down. And I think they caught it in some like trail cam or something like that. So that's where I thought, wow, that's probably the only time anybody's ever going to get that. And then I saw it, and it was on me. It was on another tent. It was on another tent. It was on another tent, and it moved. It didn't move like a helicopter spotlight. It didn't go from, okay, one tent and then slide over to the next tent and, you know, move it around a little bit until it got it. There was absolutely no sound. There was no movement of the beam. It just went click on, click off. I remember when it was on me, it was almost as though I had a vision of, we used to have a pantry growing up, and we had a string that came all the way down, because the pantry was a tall ceiling, and we would just pull the string, click, you know, click off and on. And it was kind of like that. That's what it reminded me of. It was just off and on, like a switch. And next thing I know, it was on my buddy's tent. It was on Jason's tent. It was like on. And then when it went off, it just like somebody pulled the string. And then it went over to the other tent and just, you know, like click, pull the string, and it was on. It was precise. It didn't move to the left a little bit or to the right a little bit. It knew exactly where it was going to go, and it went on, and it didn't budge. It didn't move. And it was there a long time, and it was bright. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. You could see through it, but you didn't see anything go up in it, because I was looking for that. And maybe they already went in. Maybe I missed that part, because they scramble you too. It's just the truth, your fragmented thoughts. So It's really awesome that we're going to bring on a guest tonight that's also been in a beam of light. And it's neat that, you know, he's got a good sense of humor about it. He's a good guy. It's just normal people this happens to. It just happens, you know, and sometimes it happens all your life. Sometimes it's kind of, you know, they say, you know, a one-time thing. But some people will argue that that's never the case. So first-time guest, Tom Warner is joining us. He's an artist. He's a poet. He's a historian. He was a soccer player. And he's out of Great Barrington, Massachusetts in the Berkshire Hills. That one day, that's that one day, he ended up with missing 7 minutes. He missed 7 minutes. We'll ask him how that was determined. And it was witnessed by others. And that's kind of cool. I saw the documentary that he was on and the way they were talking about how they saw him. That's pretty interesting. He was in a beam of light before disappearing in it. So now he's also best known for those soccer legs, I'm told. But also this, it was September 1, 1969 that this happened. And we're going to talk about that and the abductions, how it affected him, and what he has been doing with it ever since then. So first-time guest, welcome to Coast, Tom Warner. How are you, Tom?
Good morning, rise and shine all on the East Coast here. We have coyotes howling and the moon out full, so we're all good here.
All right. Did I mention he's got a great sense of humor, very enthusiastic. He's got it all going. And Tom, man, dude, a beam of light. Did you ever think that was ever going to happen to you and somebody was going to see you and this is how your world would be in your life, that you were in a beam of light?
You know, it's interesting, Connie, because, you know, I've always had this strange ability with mental telepathy, which it was like I could hear voices, you know, and it's, you know, it's like, you don't talk to too many people, do you? You know, I hear voices. Oh, really?
You don't tell that to people. Yeah, exactly.
There's people for you to talk to. We'll arrange that. You know, no, and
immediately, please.
Immediately, you know, and it started at such a young age and stuff. And of course, you know, my events didn't start with September 1st, 1969, that famous day up here in the Berkshires. I mean, I had bizarre happenings before that too, and one, there was an attempted kidnapping of me at 4 years old, which was
what?
You know, yeah, you didn't get yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get the book. I didn't get the book. There's a story behind that.
Talking about the book. I'm saying, like, geez, Connie, I think I forgot that to tell you that in my last conversation with you. You know? But anyway, that was the first time where I was completely 100% aware that ability was true. And I was 4 years old and a car had gone by real slow. And the strange part of it was that there was three girls, three guys, they were in their 20s. So they were old to me, you know, and they went. They all looked alike. The girls looked like triplets. All three blondes, and the guys looked like short hair, light hair. And they went by real slow. And then they went around the block, which was, you could see them, you know, going around the other side of the block from one road to the other. And I had a feeling they were coming back. And I hid behind a tree. And they stopped the car. And when they did, I ran across the street, and of course back then there was no real much traffic anyway, and I hid in a bush, and they backed up and they go, "Come out, little boy, we have candy for you."
Oh my gosh!
So, but I was like, my heart, to this day I remember my heart pounding, you know.
Scary.
And I knew the danger. It was dangerous. And, you know, normally if anybody says, "Come out, little boy, I have candy," I'm out, you know, that's it. Oh, I'm right here, over here, you know, but I knew. And then I heard this voice, "Yell for your grandfather, but don't use your voice." And I did. And my grandfather all of a sudden he came out of the house and he announced that with his rifle aimed at the car, and he says, "Driver, I'm a sharpshooter for the New York National Guard. This car moves, driver, you're dead." And he says, "I just want my grandson." And he goes, "Tommy, where are you?" And I said, "I'm over here, Grandpa." I came out at that point. And he says, and he went up to the car, and when he did, he had this, like, frightful look on his face. I had never seen my grandfather scared. I mean, he was the one with the gun, you know, I mean, you know. And they just drove off.
Were these, like, black-eyed kids?
I didn't really see them up, like, their eyes. But they all just were, they just sat there perfect. And the driver looked at him, at my grandfather. And my grandfather had this, I'd never seen my grandfather scared.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
This is a man who'd been in a Spanish-American War and the World War One, and I never saw a drop of fear in his face. And he looked frightened, you know, and I'm like, what the heck's this, you know? And he took me inside. He says, "Tommy, we're not going to talk about this. Don't talk about this to anyone."
And he says, except Connie on Coast to Coast one day except later Connie in your life.
Says, yeah, later on, when you get Connie Willis on, you can go ahead and spill the beans. It's all good. You know? I mean, it was like, it just stuck with me. When something sticks with you from that age back, you know, it was one of my
that's scary things. Yeah, Tom, do you think that's what it was? You think it was alienish?
I think they're human alien hybrids.
Okay.
Absolutely, just by that blank stare, you know. And I was like, so anyway, fast forward, you know, nothing major, well, except almost drowning at 5, but
no way. You're like a little cloud around you there, buddy.
No, actually, that's not true, because I'm still alive.
That's true. Okay.
You know, there's always two ways to look at something, you know?
Yeah.
I would have a lifetime of being brought to the edge of death and then showed how to live. And then there would be an example. There had to be a reason for it, you know? And this one, it was in the middle of winter, and well, this is not too long after my grandfather had died, and we went down, and one of my brothers says, "Oh, you can go out on the ice. It's thick enough on our Alford Brook just down the street here." And I went out on the ice, and boom, it broke, and. You know, full snowsuit and everything, as you were, you know, those, like those kids bundled up in the Christmas story.
Yeah, you know? Yes, I was thinking about that exactly.
And I went right through, and I went right under, and I came up, and I grabbed the ice, and I'm just holding on. And again, that voice was telling me what to do.
What did it tell you?
Don't let go.
Hold on,
yeah,
don't let go.
You know, you're looking down at death, and you know, the it was brutal. The cold was brutal, but you know. But anyway, that was nothing really eventful besides that until I was 10. You know.
Oh yeah, just like a few years later. Wait, the voice
I had years of enjoy life. What's that?
The voice that you hear at this point. Are you thinking, this is God, this is Jesus, this is Uncle Bob who passed away, or, you know, Grandpa? Did you think anything at all?
Just that it was a voice, you know?
It was just natural.
Didn't really connect to it, just other than it was a voice of, you know, hanging onto ice seemed pretty logical, even to a 5-year-old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I had Spock's logic. I don't know. You know, maybe some kids would have been flashing in the water and down they go. You know, I mean, it was, you know.
Yeah, but you remembered that. You did remember that.
I remember. Yeah. Sitting here, Connie, I can, you know, actually see looking down the ice and hearing the babbling brook and the beauty and the quietness of it. yet the danger of, you know, knowing that the beauty was also death.
Yeah.
And knowing I had to hold on it, and it was hard to hold on because, you know, you're completely soaked. The water's gone through your jacket, like, instantly. And you're trying to breathe, but you're struggling to breathe because it's hurting your lungs so much just to breathe, you know?
Mm. And but what anyway, happened? Yeah, did your brother pulled you out?
Well, yeah, I had they formed a line and you know, just one kid after another. And
wow.
I felt the grip on my wrist and then they pulled me out of the drink and, you know, oh boy, did they catch hell from mom.
I bet.
You know, oh geez, you know, my mother had like all mothers, my Irish mother had a, you know, way of just looking at you, you know, you didn't, you know, it was, she didn't need to say any words. God bless her, you know. But anyway, so fast forward, because that's what we're getting to, was the incident in 1969, you know. And it started picking up pace, you know. I was 10 years old. And we were actually on vacation up on Lake Champlain, a beautiful place called up on Willsboro Point, which is, you know, Lake Champlain at that point's on the Wide Lake. So it's about, you know, from there to Vermont, it's about 6-7 miles straight across to Burlington, 12 miles by water. And my father, you know, we were all raconteurs. The stories in our family stories get passed down since we were on Nantucket in 1715. So, you know, these stories, story time was important to us kids. And my father, you know, he had a good sense of humor and would tell stories. But on one particular night, he was very fidgety, you know. And Dad started telling a story about UFOs, and I really didn't know what he was talking about. You know, I never heard of a UFO. I didn't even know what he was talking about. And then he went into detail how about his boss's wife was over in Vermont, and his wife came home and said that there was a UFO, and telling the story how it was just over and landed. And he goes, okay, dear, well, the next day we'll go over there and look. And so the next day he went over there, and there's a big burnt circle in the grass where she had said the UFO was.
Now, hold on to that thought, because we're going to come back. I wanted to catch you at a good spot, and that's a good spot. So we're talking with Tom Warner, and he's telling us about what happened September 1, 1969. Stay with us. This is good stuff here. Connie Willis and Coast to Coast AM. It is Coast to Coast AM. I am Connie Willis, and you can go to our website right now, and you can see some of the pictures that Tom Warner, our guest, for the rest of the evening, has sent to us, where he's got pictures that he took of an orb, and you're going to see it in different spots, and it's a different color. Now, you know, it's difficult. There's a lot of people that believe they have orbs, but you know how that one's a tough one, right? You guys know that. That's a tough one. But when you got one and you know that you got one, you know that you got one. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. It's a really cool color as well. And I'll ask him about it at one point. But go to our website and check it out. There's like 4 or 5 pictures. And he talks about, you'll see where the orbs are differently in different places. And then he says at one point that it goes right inside of him, and you can actually see it heading his way. It's like, man, too bad he didn't have video of that one, man. That was, whoa. So check it out. Our website, we have so much cool stuff on there. CoastToCoastAM.com is where to go. It's another very interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM, Real Theater of the Mind. Hope you're enjoying it. Our guest tonight, Tom Warner, had a UFO encounter that has been very famous over time, and people have talked about it a lot and different perspectives of it. It was in 1969. Now, We were right in the middle of the story with Tom. And, you know, go ahead and start from where you were, set us back up again.
Do you know, that's funny. When we were filming in the television show, and the director looked at me and he says, "Okay, take it from your last line."
Did you go line, please?
It was a dark and stormy night. Okay, now we're ready. Anyway, so we were sitting by a campfire, and, you know, all the stars are out, and, you know, the lake is a soft breeze coming off the lake. And like I was saying, normally my father's like, you know, he was always upbeat and everything, but he had the most frightful look on his face telling that story about the UFO. And then he looked at us and he says, "Kids, if you ever see one of these UFOs, you run." I'm going, and my brother, we said, "Okay, good night." We're out of there. And, you know, we were 10, 11 years old. I was 10. My brothers were 11, you know. They're a year older than me. They're twins. And I remember just, I swear, I was up for like an hour after that, you know. I mean, I just couldn't fall asleep thinking, like, what was he talking? I had no idea. So anyway, that ended the vacation. We got home and, you know, Labor Day came and weekend came, and we went over to my grandmother's and found out that she was dying at that time. I didn't know what cancer was at that time, but she was dying, and so my mother wanted to see her mother, Nana, who was she was an immigrant from Ireland, you know, and. But my mother says, "Oh, we got more time for the weekend and stuff." And we did. And it was Labor Day. And it was hot. It was hot. Just like it was like 4th of July hot. It was hot that weekend. And so we went swimming down in our brook. And it was just a regular day. You know, when you look back at something, you say, was there anything unusual? Did you feel anything unusual? No, nothing. And then I just, typically, I said to my mother, "Can I go over to Shaw's," which was literally, you know, straight across our lot. It was a lot in between our house and theirs. And I said, "Can I go over to Shaw's to go color?" And my mother says, "Oh, sure, you know." And back then, you know, as long as you're at home at a reasonable time, you know, it didn't get too late or anything. You know, the grandmother would look out and make sure we made it across the lot, you could see. And so we went over and just coloring nicely. And I remember just enjoying coloring. We were in a back room and, excuse me, and all of a sudden I had that mental telepathy again. And I got up and I went over to the window and looked out. And the telepathy said, "You need to go home right now." I'm like, "Debbie," I said, "I have to go home right now." She said, "Why?" She goes, "Is your mother calling you?" I said, "I don't think it's my mother." I said, "But I have to go home right now." I said, "I don't know. Maybe it's God talking to me from those clouds. I didn't know." And I was just like, I just had, just adrenaline was filling my body, you know. And I have to tell you, I was a really fast kid. I mean, I could run like a deer, you know? And I ran into the next room. I looked at the grandmother and her sister, Jane, who was on the phone. And they looked back at me because I must have had this frightful look on my face. I said, "I have to go home right now. I have to go home right now." And I bolted out the door. And the sun had gone down, and it was in that hour where it's not dark, dark, but it's, you know, the stars aren't up, but it's, you know, dusk, a little, pretty dark. And I ran out the door, and then to get out of that house, there was a hall, which was in the coal room, which had no light, you know, so between my feelings of light and the darkness of that room, I bolted out of that house. And I remember sprinting across full speed across their driveway. And then this bizarre feeling was coming over me, like everything was going in slow motion. And I hit this spot where there was a rock. And as I hit the rock, it was like the sensation, like I was going in slow motion, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to my, something was drawing my attention to my left, and I looked to my left, and a UFO dropped right out of the sky. Poof, was right there, probably 35 feet, 40 feet up in the air at most.
Like a saucer or cigar?
Yeah,
or...
like a saucer. UFO. Okay. It was round, and I would say it was 40 feet, thereabouts, 25 feet more height, you know? And a beam came on, and I'm in this beam, and then my arms jerked back. And the best way I can describe it is if you go underwater swimming, and then you're way deep and you start coming up, and that first breath when you're like sucking for air and go like that, only it was the air, I was like the air was being sucked out of me for a split second. And then instantly I'm seeing images. And the first image I saw was a girl off to my right, and she was like crouched in a corner, and she had the most frightful look on her face. Oh my God. And that was turned out to be Melanie, who was on that program on Unsolved Mysteries with me. And I didn't know her at the time. I found out who she was years later. And then I remember seeing off to my left, I saw other kids, but if I saw them, just like horrible, just the looks were scaring me to death, you know? And then I saw an alien. I saw two aliens, and then another guy that was like in a uniform. He looked like, you know, just bizarre looking, you know?
So what did the aliens, were they little grays that you saw?
Well, light, you know, it was kind of foggy, but the interesting part, we'll get to that. And then I saw a table, and then I saw a panel of instruments, and then there was I kept seeing these lights, and they were the lights that were going around on the outside, but there was reflection coming in from the window that I was at. But anyway, it was interesting about the alien was that I actually did a drawing of it in our garage. My father, you know, we had an old farmhouse, so he put up cardboard and then he put up insulation over that. But before he did that, I did drawings of it. And I forgot about the drawings. And then last fall, I had to rebuild the garage. And when I opened up, I forgot all about the drawings. And I looked at them, like, oh my God.
That brought back memories.
Oh my goodness. You know, I mean, here it was, you know, you're looking at something I had done over 50 years ago in a frantic drawing to just record what I saw. And it was very interesting because the drawing looked a little like a little Yoda-like, you might say.
Oh, okay.
But that was in 1969. You know, Star Wars didn't even exist, you know, and I had drawn something like that. And the other alien was a female alien, and she had like this long stringy hair. Thin.
Hmm.
And
you said there was another one too. Did that look the same?
There was a look like a human, kind of like, I would say, like those people that tried to abduct me back when I was 5. That's what the person looked like. Yeah, I'll remember that till the day I die, you know?
Hmm. Okay.
But the thing that someone says, well, did the alien leave an impression? No. The kids, their kids' expressions on their face just are ingrained in me. You can't get that out of your mind. So anyway, back to the what happened after that.
Well, if I could comment on that, when you say that, what that reminds me of is when I've seen when people will cage up an animal that they caught out in the woods or something like that, and they'll have it caged up, and that animal's just screaming, you know, just like, and wants out, and has that face that, you know, that I would go out later and release it.
Right.
But
right.
Like that's, right?
Exactly. That's exactly, yeah. You know? And, you know, it was like exit stage right, get me out of here, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I always think about when they make you forget, you know, and then people have PTSD later. It's because they were looking and going through what you're saying those kids' faces were showing.
Well,
yeah.
Post-traumatic stress, you know, the human brain encodes memory based on different things. Sound, sight, touch, these senses that we take in. And depending on the severity of it, is how much we can recall it, even if we're trying not to recall it. And that's where people have a problem. You have to, I've come to accept my life. I've come to accept all the bizarreness of it, and that's the whole reason I came forward, was to help others. I just felt compelled eventually to do that, but we'll get to that. But anyway, so the next thing, it's like I blinked my eyes, and when I was fully conscious, I was like a foot off the ground, floating, and the last foot I came down. And I'm still in a beam, and I can't move. And my brother, one of my brothers was in back. That was my brother Bo, who's since passed away. And Bo, he goes, "Run, Tommy, run!" I said, "I can't. It's holding me down." And this beam of light, and I felt that was so perplexing to me that I remember having the thought, "How could a like a flashlight hold you on the ground?" You know, you remember when we were kids, you'd play flashlight tag or something like that. Yeah, I got you at night, you know. But this thing was holding me in, a beam was holding me, a light was holding me on the ground. And the mental telepathy again said to me, "You're okay. We'll be done in a minute." And a minute went by, and they go, "We're done now." And the beam comes up, and I roll to my right, and I stand up. And the UFO had to slowly rise over the trees. And then it was gone. And as soon as it was gone, I looked at my brother for a split second, and I bolted into the house, and I lost all memory till morning. I just remember running past my telephone and just being like in shock. And the next morning, my brother looks at me and goes, "Whoa." That's all he said. Whoa. And the next day when we went over to the neighbor's house, they said, "I didn't say boo all day." And the neighbor says, "Tommy, normally you're a chatterbox." I said, "Are you kidding?" Oh, that's a surprise. And they said I didn't say anything. I was just like completely silent. And so the grandmother, who was witnessing this, has my mother come over. And this is according to Jane, who witnessed the whole thing. And Jane says, "You didn't say anything." And she goes, "Graham brought it up and says, we need to talk about what happened last night." And my mother says, "We're not going to talk about it anymore. That's it. We're not going to talk about it." And they never did, you know. It was like this taboo subject, you know. And it wasn't even until years later when Jane came forward and told what she saw, which was extremely important. And Jane said how they were scared just seeing me, and I ran out of the house, and a beam of light came on me, and she goes, "Tommy, you were running, but you weren't moving." And I'm like, "Oh." And then what happened, Jane? It was funny because we had the, to be interviewed for that Netflix show, Unsolved Mysteries, the executive producer and the owner came to our house and interviewed it. And they said to Jane, "Well, what happened next?" And Jane says, "And then he was running, he wasn't moving. He was in that beam." And she says, "He was gone. He just disappeared." And Bob Weiss says, "What do you mean disappeared? He was gone. He just vanished right in the beam. He was gone." And then about 7 minutes, 7 to 9 minutes later, she says, "It just put him back down at the other end of the property over by his house."
Yeah. Well,
so I was the only person ever witnessed I was in a beam and witnessed disappear in the beam and witnessed put back, which I'm glad it put me back, of course, you know.
Is that how you got the 7 minutes that you knew it was 7 minutes?
Yeah, it was the grandmother and Jane who had timed it. But anyway,
I can't imagine how they felt during that time, you know.
Oh, the grandmother was completely panicked. In fact, before the grandmother died, she said her grandmother was dying, and one of her last things that she spoke of was me. And she called her granddaughter, Jane, who witnessed it, into the room. And she says, "Jane, do you remember that night with Tommy?" And she says, "Yeah, of course, Grim." And she goes, "Did they ever figure out what happened to him that night?" And she goes, "No, Grim, they didn't. We don't talk about it." And she goes, "Is he okay?" And Jane says, "Yeah, he's okay, Grim." She goes, "That's good." And she closed her eyes, and it was the last thing she said.
Oh, wow.
She died.
Mm.
You know? And so for someone to have that on their mind, and of all the things of last thoughts to come to their mind before they passed on to the other side, was 10-year-old Tommy Warner disappearing in a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
It brought me to tears. It really did, you know. You know, to think that, you know, she had me in her heart all those years, you know. So, but anyway, it wasn't the first. I said it wasn't the last. And
uh-oh. Well, hold that thought. It wasn't the first. It wasn't the last. We've got more of this to go. Wow. Actually remembering what the aliens look like. Actually, more so remembering the other people just like him with these frightened faces. Yeah, that's the stuff too that I just find amazing. So, wow, more to the story. Stay with us. It is the Berkshire incident and Tom Warner. Connie Willis here with you on Coast to Coast AM.